weekly lunch and learn. The mitzvah shiur is what we call this. And we do a different mitzvah every week. And this week is Parshat Yitro. So there's a lot to choose from, because this week is the Aseret HaDibrot, the Ten Commandments.
Oh, good.
So we are going to focus on Shabbat, but a very unique question regarding Shabbat. So I need to do a few introductory things first before we get to the actual question that we are going to deal with. So let's just start with the Pasuk that teaches us about the obligation to observe Shabbat and not to do milacha, not to do certain types of activity on Shabbat. It comes from Shemot, Perek Chaf, Shemot 20, Pasuk Tet, verse 9, V'yom ha-shvi'i Shabbat la-Hashem Elokecha, lo ta'aseh chol milacha, ata uvincha uvitecha, avdecha v'yamatcha uvehemtecha, v'gerecha asher b'sharecha. But the seventh day is a Sabbath day to Hashem your God. You shall not do any work on it, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your livestock, nor your strangers within your gates. Everyone who you're responsible for has to rest on Shabbat. That's the Pasuk. And we'll just see the mitzvah that the way we've normally, Andre, milking animals on Shabbat is not so simple for other, it's not prohibited because they're not resting on Shabbat, but there's a separate Shabbat prohibition regarding milking animals on Shabbat. And so that's why in the old days, the kibbutzim in Israel had to hire non-Jewish workers to milk the cows on Shabbat. And now they do it with a mechanical timer. So they attach the milking machine to the udders at a certain time, and then they go on their own. They go on their own on Shabbat. It's an excellent question, but not directly related, but still a great question. Okay, so the Sefer HaChinuch says, Shelo lasot melacha b'Shabbat. One of the mitzvot in this week's parsha is not to do activity on Shabbat. Shelo lasot melacha b'yom ha-Shabbat. Anachnu velo naniach lasot l'vineinu v'avadeinu v'hemteinu. Just like we saw in the Pasuk, that we are not allowed to work on Shabbat, and we are not allowed to have our children, our slaves, our animals to work on Shabbat either. Okay, the Pasuk that we saw. It's actually mislabeled. It should be verse 9. Okay, now, so what activities are not allowed on Shabbat, right? Where do we, the Pasuk doesn't tell us. It just says milacha. You're not allowed to do activity on Shabbat. So which activities are not allowed? So the Mishnah in Masechet Shabbat tells us the following. Avot milachot arba'im chaser achat. There are 39 categories or types of work or examples of work that are called avot milachot. They represent the main categories of activity that we are not allowed to do on Shabbat. Okay? And the Mishnah lists all of them. I'm not gonna read them all, but you're welcome to read them at your own time. We're gonna be focusing really on Hazorea and Choresh, sowing and plowing. Okay? Planting and plowing. Okay? That's what we're gonna be focusing on today. So the Mishnah says that these are the activities that you're not allowed to do. Okay? Now the question is, where do these come from? Right? I'm running through this quickly. Really, we should take more time, but I want to get to the main topic. The question is, where do these things come from? Right? Where do these 39 categories, and Andre asked another good question in the chat, why does it say 40 minus 1? Instead of just saying 39, we'll get to that in a moment. Where do these come from? So the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat tells us, Hach dehave b'mishkan chashiva kari le'av, hach delo have b'mishkan chashiva lo kari le'av. That which was a significant labor in the Mishkan, in the traveling temple, that's called an av melacha. That's one of the 39. And that which was not significant labor in the Mishkan is not considered av. It's not one of the 39. Now, we could spend a lot of time focusing on why there is a connection But why this is the way it's established? Meaning, what does the Mishkan have to do with Shabbos? Right? Why is it that the 39 Avot Melachot are the things that were important in the Mishkan? It doesn't seem to be an obvious connection. One answer where the rabbis glean this from is that if you look in the Torah, the way that Shabbat and the rules of the Mishkan are juxtaposed, you get the following picture. A commandment to build the Mishkan, followed by an obligation to observe the Shabbat, followed by the interruption of the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf, followed by more instructions to, more instructions to build the Mishkan, followed by yet again instructions to observe the Shabbat. So what you have is you have the Mishkan sandwiched between the obligation to observe Shabbat, and the rabbis derive from that yes, the Torah is telling us it's very important to build a Mishkan, but right after they tell you to build the Mishkan, they're telling you to observe Shabbat, indicating that building the Mishkan and anything related to the Mishkan does not override Shabbat. Okay? So we have, the steps are, we're not allowed to do Melacha on Shabbat. The Melachot are defined as those things which were important in the functioning of the Mishkan, which comes to 39 total. Okay? And the Mishkan, let's remember, was in the Midbar, was in the desert. We're not talking about the Beit HaMikdash, which was in Yerushalayim. We're talking about the Mishkan, which was in the Midbar, the Bnei Yisrael were able to take it apart and put it back together, depending on when God told the Jewish people to camp and when God told the Jewish people to decamp and continue their journey to Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Next, here are the 39 Melachot. This is cute. I don't know if you remember from your high school chemistry days, you had the chemistry table, so they made a Melachot table, and they're broken up into groups. This is the group we're focusing on, the orange group. The orange group is often called Sidura Dipat, the order of making bread, because these first group were needed in order to make the showbread, the Lechem HaPanim, that was replaced every Friday in the Mishkan. So first you plowed, and then you sowed, then you planted, then you harvested, then you gathered, then you threshed to get to separate the wheat from the chaff. Then you throw it out, Zorea, you winnowed it, you put it up in the air, and the wind would blow away the light covering of the kernel, and the hard kernel will fall down. Then you separate the good from the bad. Then you grind it. Then you sift it. Then you knead it. Then you bake it. Okay? And that's how you make bread. If you didn't know, that we skip. Nowadays, we skip 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We skip the first 9. We go right to kneading and baking. So we have it easy. Okay? But in the Mishkan, they had to do all of them, okay? You see also here, for example, Gozes, they had to shear the animals, shear the sheep for karbanot. Milabein, they had to not only shear the sheep for karbanot, they also had to shear the sheep to use the wool to make some of the coverings in the Mishkan. They had to whiten them. So you see a number of melachot. And here I have another visual which explains precisely what each is needed for. So this, by the way, this first group is both for Sidura Depat, what was necessary for making bread, but some of them were also necessary for growing the herbs and the plants in order to dye the material to use as the fancy coverings in the Mishkan and for the clothes of the Kohen and the Kohen Gadol. Okay? That's another, it's going to be important for us as well. So now here you see this other visual. Group A consists of melachot needed in the Mishkan to prepare the showbread. and to prepare vegetable dye. Group B consists of malachot needed in the Mishkan to prepare the fabrics for the various curtains. Group C, up on top here on the right, consists of malachot needed in the Mishkan to prepare a covering made from hides. Group D, subgroups for different things that were needed in the Mishkan, for the actual building of the Mishkan. For example, the writing, they had to write letters on the bottom and the top of the krashim, of the boards used to build the Mishkan, so they would know next time which two pieces went together, right? It's like when you build a sukkah, you want to label this goes next to this, A to A, so that way you could make sure to build it the same way the next time, okay? So those are the 39 melachot. Now, so we have a question. Our question is as follows. Remember, we said, let's just look at these two first ones here. Choresh and Zorea, plowing and sowing. Let's recall that these were melachot that were needed in the functioning of the Mishkan in the wilderness, in the desert. So here's the question. Maybe you've thought of the question yourself already. The question is raised by lots of people. I have it for you here in the name of the Minchat Chinuch. We've discussed it, studied before, a commentary on the Sefer HaChinuch. He asks as follows. V'hine, Charisha Nikra Av. Charisha, he's going to talk about, but the same thing would apply to Zorea. Plowing is called an Av. It's one of the main categories of prohibited activity on Shabbos. If you remember, we saw a Mishnah that says the main categories that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos are from the Mishkan. Umivuar b'gemara, kol milacha dahave b'mishkan, have av. Everything that was done in the Mishkan is one of these main categories. V'haya b'mishkan charisha l'tzorech hasimamanim. And charisha, plowing, was needed in the Mishkan in order to create the dyes for the clothing, as we said here. Dye stuffs in order to color the various fabrics. And now the Minchas Chinuch asks a question. Ulechora, b'midbar ha'echaya charisha uzriya. In the desert, how could they have plowed and planted? Ha'afar midbar eino mitzamechet. You can't grow things in the desert. That's why it's called a desert. That's the whole point of the desert. You can't grow anything in it. So what happened? What was going on here? Right? How? First of all, why is this called an av melacha if the definition of an av melacha is something needed in the, that was done in the Mishkan? How could this have been done in the Mishkan? Because it's a desert. Second, if it wasn't done in the Mishkan, where'd they get the stuff from? By the way, it's not only about the dyes. Don't forget, wood, a ton of wood was used in the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Where were there these trees all of a sudden that they're chopping down in order to build the parts of the Beit of the Mishkan? So that's the question, right? We've gone through a whole Sipur. To be considered an Av Melacha, it needs to have been done in the Mishkan. There were 39 such Av Melachot. The first two are plowing and sowing. Uh-oh. How do you plow and sow in the desert? So that's the question. Okay? We're going to look at three approaches to this question that we find in the commentaries. And they are fascinating. Fascinating. Okay. I'm going to stop here. Any comments or questions, you could put them in the chat, or you could use the raise hand function or wave at me on the screen. I'll try to pay attention. Any comments or questions? I don't see anything. I don't see anyone using the raise hand function. I don't see anyone literally raising their hand, and nothing in the chat. All right, let's carry on then. Does everyone understand the question? Do you think it's a good question?
I don't understand the question.
The question is, if the prohibited Shabbat activities are defined as those things which were done in the construction and ongoing activity in the Mishkan. And the Mishkan was in the desert. How is it possible that they were planting plowing and planting things in the desert? Things don't grow in the desert. So how could plowing and planting be one of the 39 prohibited activities if it seems impossible to have done it in the desert?
Maybe like man, it's a miracle.
That's the question, Rosalie. Do you understand the question now?
Now I do. Thank you very much for repeating it. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. All right.
It was like man, it was a miracle.
All right, great. Let's see. We have three approaches. Let's see. So we understand the question. Approach number one. By the way, we also have this issue. Vayu b'nei Yisrael b'midbar, vayimtzu ish mikoshes etzim b'yom ha-shabbat. Once when the Israelites were in the wilderness, they came upon a man gathering wood on the Shabbat day. Where did that come from? Okay. Now, by the way, some say it doesn't mean gathering. Some say it means chopping. So assuming it means chopping, where are there trees that they were chopping?
Well, it says wilderness, and it could have been, it didn't say desert, it said wilderness. So maybe there was a forest somewhere nearby that they had to pass through, and not even a dense one necessarily.
Well, we basically know the route. We know the route. I don't know if there are deserts, if there are forests there, but you're on to something, Andrea. You're on to something. Excellent. Let's see. Approach number one, shared by a number of people. The Talmud Yerushalmi says as follows. Matnitin achoresh kol shuhu haminachesh v'amikarseim v'amizareid kol shuhu chayav hamilaket chayav. Meaning, even if you just plow a tiny bit, you just take your finger and stick it in the ground enough to put a tiny seed, that's a biblical violation of choresh. V'hamilaket etzim letakein kol shehen im lahasik kedei levashel beitza kala. Or if you take enough wood to cook a small egg, etc. So then the Gemara says right here, Ma Charisha Haita B'Mishkan. Our question, where was this Charisha in the Mishkan? Answers the Yerushalmi, Shehayu Charshin Litasim Mamanim. The Yerushalmi just takes it for granted. They plowed in order to plant herbs. Apparently, the Talmud Yerushalmi feels that they were able to do it, right? It was possible to do, okay? Along the lines of what D'Andrea suggested. We have others like that. We have others. The Talmud Bavli, Darash Rav Nachman Bar Chista, Ein Mechasim Ela B'davar Shezorim Bo Umatzmiach. So this is going to take us a little far afield. There's a halacha that when you do shechita, when you shecht an animal, you have to cover the animal's blood with earth. So the Gemara in Masechet Chulin is trying to explain what type of earth can be used to fulfill that obligation, that mitzvah. So the Gemara says only a type of earth that can grow things in. Right, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak said, Rav Nachman Bar Chista said, one may not cover the blood of an undomesticated animal or a bird except with the substance in which seed or is sown and sprouts. So it needs to be some type of arable earth. There's a long toast, not a long toast, it's actually a short toast, but a toast wrote in Masechet Chulin commenting on this, that's trying to figure out what's this? The Mishnah had already said something like this, and so it's trying to figure out what this statement adds. What exclusionary properties does this Mishnah add? At the end of the Tosfot, it says as follows: V'yesh lomar, d'shema az kishebo'u sham Yisrael haya matzmiach. It could be that what the Tosfot is saying is now it doesn't look like it would grow anything, but az, back then, when B'nai Yisrael was traveling, maybe, he says Shema, he's not 100% sure, Shema, maybe it was able to grow things. He distinguishes here just technically between things which grow on their own and things which grow and cultivated. And he's suggesting that the desert can grow things on its own, which sort of are natural to the climate and the conditions, but cannot grow things which one tries to cultivate. But in any case, he says at the end of his Tosfot, maybe things were able to grow there. They had the mun, but the mun didn't grow. The mun fell from heaven. Right? Okay. Next in this category is the Ibn Ezra. And he asks a great question. He takes us through what it must have been like leaving Mitzrayim and trying to figure out this whole question of planting. So he says, Yesh l'tmoa, lama hotziyu atzei shitim, kimat sorech yesh lahem, v'od hinei ha-mitzrim choshrim ki lazevachem holchim, v'achar kein yashuvu, v'al kein hishilum, v'eich yotziyu kurashim rabim erech kol echad asar amot. They didn't know that B'nai Yisrael were, meaning he's trying to deal with the question of where they got the big trees, the big lumber to build the Mishkan. So first he says, well, maybe they brought it out of Egypt. And he says, I got two problems with that. First of all, they didn't know about the Mishkan yet. So why would they bring out pieces of lumber that are 20 amot long? And second of all, even if you want to argue that they did know about it and they borrowed them or took them from the Egyptians, why would the Egyptians give them 20 amot long pieces of lumber? The Egyptians thought they were going just for 3 days to do sacrifices. Why on earth would they need to take all of this lumber? And they were walking through Egypt, including through the governmental areas. What would they possibly say to the people who would ask them, hey, I know you're leaving for 3 days. Why are you taking all this lumber? You're only going for 3 days. Maybe, he says, and there's another midrash to back this up, that they had some sort of tradition that they were going to leave for good and not come back and maybe also build the Mishkan. But then he says, but the most logical thing is, Yesh levakesh derech acheret. There's got to be another way to answer this question. Ki haya samuch el har Sinai ya'ar atzei shitim. And it must have been, he says, a forest. Like one of you said. Who was, I'm not sure, it was Andrea who said maybe there's a forest. Near Har Sinai of shitim trees. Ubivoam sham amar lehem Moshe shesham yitakvu harbeh. And Moshe said, ah, this is a good place to stay. We got to stay here and build the Mishkan because we got the, this is where the lumber yard is. Doesn't answer the question about the plowing and sowing for herbs, but it does indicate that according to this school of thought, things did grow, not only little shrubs, but according to this opinion, and that's why the place is called Shitim. Moshe called it that because that's what he found there. He found all of these trees. So that is approach number one. Things do grow in the wilderness, in the desert, and that's why they were able to find the trees, and perhaps that's why they were maybe also able to cultivate other things. Again, not necessarily, because there's a difference between finding things which are indigenous to that climate and those conditions versus trying to, you know, plant a garden of foreign substances, but it opens up the possibility. That's option number one. Option number two is no. Things don't grow in the desert, except when they do. And when do they grow in the desert? When God says they should grow in the desert. And here we have a couple of schools of thought in this position as well. The first and really interesting one is the Or HaChaim. The Or HaChaim says as follows. He's asked the same question. He references the Gemara that we talked about in Masechet Chulin. What type of afar, what type of earth or dust can be used? But then he says, "V'amru Zichronam Levracha, he's quoting a midrash, Shebe'era shel Miriam, Haya Mashke, Vahaya Ma'ale, Ginot Upardesim. This is just an amazing image. We know there was Be'er Miriam that traveled along with Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar. Just picture this hole in the ground, you know, traveling behind, you know, Bnei Yisrael. So once you're already talking about a miraculous well that follows them, attached to it, the rabbis do, some other miraculous qualities. And that is, not only was there water in it, but this water was able to turn the desert, right, the arid desert, into ganim, ganot, and what is ganot and pardesim, right, orchards and gardens. So just picture this beautiful oasis that seemed to have surrounded Bnei Yisrael wherever they were going, or at least surround the Be'er, surrounded the well wherever they were going. So generally speaking, you can't cultivate things in the desert, but if you're lucky enough to have the Be'er Miriam, then you can. And that's point number one, approach number one in it's one approach in the second section. The first section, again, is perfectly natural. Sometimes things grow in the desert. Number two, no, things do not grow in the desert. But in this case, they did because God performed the miracle. That's the Orach Chaim, and here's the Orach Chaim in English as well. That's number two. So far, we have two opinions that share something in common. They both share that things did grow in the desert at that time. One approach is things naturally grow in the desert at that time. And the second is, no, things do not grow in the desert. But God did a miracle, okay? I'm going to stop here and take another question from Andrea. We don't really know for sure what the vegetation was like at that time. We did have to worry about enemies, so there must have been some sustenance in the desert. Well, yeah, there was man, right? We didn't need this for food. God gave us food in the desert. In addition, perhaps desert has a different definition, such as a void and spirituality. Yeah, it does. But it can't not mean desert, right? We have a concept in Parshanut that says, Ein mikra yotzei midei pshuto. That when we read a pasuk, our first obligation in reading the Torah is to get the fundamental, basic, non-symbolic, real meaning of the psukim. That's the first obligation. So I believe that when the Torah says midbar, it means desert / wilderness. It could also mean spiritual wilderness. But that can't be to the exclusion of real wilderness.
No, it doesn't have to. It doesn't have to. Could be that there's a combination. It was a long trek that they had, so who knows what was there in different places. And there were enemies there, and they didn't have mon.
Hold on one second, Shula. But those enemies may not have been, we don't know if they were traveling tribes or not. They may have had, you know, cities somewhere, and then they traveled into the desert. I'm not sure. It's a good question. But yeah, that's why option number one is helpful. Yeah, things do grow. You can find an oasis here and there.
Even if they were traveling, they had to have food somehow, and there were no 7-Elevens, you know, so they had to have it from some sort.
Okay. Shula, what's your question? Right. Yep. Shula's suggesting that there may be some places in deserts where things do grow. And that was approach number one. Yes.
Oasis.
Okay. Mom?
Well, they say Israel turned the desert into a garden. If I don't know how long they stayed in each place, but they could have planted and sown and then go on.
Yeah, but I would assume the longer they stayed, the better.
Yeah, well, I don't think they moved every day.
No, they didn't. That's right.
So
that's
they
tricky,
could
but again,
have planted. There are and if you water it enough and if you give it enough tender, it can grow. And then they go on to the next place.
It can. Yep, that's possible. All right, let's look at approach number three. Approach number three, I like the best. I think it's fascinating. Approach number three is nothing grew, neither naturally nor through a miracle. And you could even say that some things did grow, but not what they needed. Meaning, even if there are things that grow naturally in the desert, like certain shrubs, cactus, or even the shittim trees that the Ibn Ezra talked about, that's not what they needed. I mean, they needed the shittim trees, but that's not all that they needed. The answer is nothing grew.
I mean,
but
go off and come back.
But what happened was, according to the Minchas Chinuch, right? They took with them out of Egypt. Ach yoter nered devaday lo hayu charshim az simamanim ki haya muchan biyadam. They took it with them out of Egypt when they were going. They had some sort of Kabbalah. They had some sort of historical tradition that there was going to be a Mishkan and they were going to need these things. So they took them with them from Mitzrayim. And finally, Rashi says this as well. He says, but from where did they get this wilderness?
I showed you.
Rabbi.
Here we go. Watch this.
Rabbi Tanchuma explained it thus. Our father Jacob foresaw by the gift of the Holy Spirit that Israel would once build a tabernacle in the wilderness. He therefore brought cedars to Egypt and planted them there, and bade his children to take these with them when they would leave. And maybe they also took the other things as well, the other herbs and plants needed as well. I wish everyone a good day.